And we're back. Hi, everybody. I'm John Lovett. I am recording from home because, of course, after 2 weeks on the road, I ended up with COVID. But joining us in the studio, we have Kendra and Hallie.
Woo!
Hello.
And, let's get into it. What a weekday. Sure. President Biden's family reportedly urged him to stay in the race during a previously planned gathering at Camp David over the weekend in the wake of his disastrous debate performance. In his granddaughter's defense, she is only three and was explicitly told she would receive ice cream if she said it.
Listen, I'm sure Christmas at the White House is something a three-year-old loves. Oh, doesn't want to give up.
I hope we make it. December's coming up.
Imagine having a family that believes in you that hard. My parents keep urging me to drop out, and I don't even know what they were talking about. And by the way, like, of course your family is going to be encouraging. You can't tell your own grandfather to retire, bitch. That's what podcasts and editorials are for. Advisors told reporters that family members had offered their unequivocal support and blamed the team that prepared him for the debate. But that's what families are supposed to do. I'm sure Taylor Kitsch's family told him that John Carter of Mars was going to be a hit. And then when it wasn't, blamed the studio. Doesn't mean his career wasn't fucked.
It's like when my parents encouraged me to do that Morgan Stanley internship for a summer because my parents were bankers and then were mad because I fell asleep in like every meeting.
I don't think it is like that, but thank you for telling us about it, Kendra.
Well, no, because, you know, falling asleep in meetings, I think there's something,
yeah,
there's
a correlation.
Yeah. First Lady Jill Biden told Vogue that the family will not let those 90 minutes define the 4 years he's been president. We will continue to fight. The First Lady added that Biden will always do what's best for the country. And she's right. Those 90 minutes shouldn't define Biden's presidency. And they won't unless Trump wins, in part because of what those 90 minutes represented in the minds of voters. In which case, you know, yeah, I'm sure the Vogue thing was arranged long before, but it really is ill-timed.
Yeah, not great.
It's not great. It's like, oh, we're on the cover of Vogue? Terrific.
And then it's hard because it's like, well, I should call Vogue, but I do want to be on the cover of Vogue.
Well, they definitely reached back out for that quote.
No,
the
thing was already done. It really isn't the problem. Vogue isn't the problem. At first, a lot of Democrats were rallying behind Biden. Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi blamed CNN moderators for not fact-checking Trump lies, which they said they wouldn't do in the debate terms Biden agreed to.
How can you have a legitimate debate when somebody is totally lying and you have to completely dispel their falsehoods?
If only someone had been at the debate to fact check Trump, someone other than Trump and the moderators who said they wouldn't fact check Trump, an opponent of sorts. Biden himself tried to reassure donors at the fundraiser at the home of New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy on Saturday night, telling them, "I didn't have a great night, but I'm going to be fighting harder." Here's what's grating about the Biden team's response here. It wasn't just a bad night. It was the night. Biden didn't fall apart at a bingo hall in Milwaukee. He fell apart during the debate that he asked for to prove that he wasn't falling apart while 51 million Americans watched live. It's like getting blackout drunk at your own wedding, karate kicking the cake, and then telling your wife, "Sorry, babe, went a little too hard with the boys last night. Want to get pancakes?" "No, Stephen, we have to talk about this." In a Sunday call with top donors, Biden's campaign manager explained how it would work if Biden stepped aside, which he emphasized was definitely not happening. Without getting too in the weeds, the plan would be to cryogenically freeze Biden's head, which would then be stored until we discover a cure for being given too many facts and figures during debate prep. Should Biden step aside, which he's currently not doing, most of the campaign funds would go to Vice President Kamala Harris, with a smaller chunk going to the DNC. "Oh, how about that? I had no idea," said Kamala Harris, as she stirred a crumbled Benadryl into a pint of vanilla ice cream. The Biden campaign on Monday released a new ad aired at Cleaning Up the Debate Mess with footage from his energetic rally the next day.
"I know I'm not a young man, but I know how to do this job. I know right from wrong. I know how to tell the truth."
And then later on in the rally, Biden kicked things up another energetic notch. All right. Come on. That's not right. Obviously.
Look at him go, though.
Look at him go.
Incredible.
It is that message, like, "I know I'm not a young man, but I know right from wrong. You know, I can do this job." Like, what is frustrating to me is, like, that direct case at the age issue is what he should have been doing already. That would have been the best argument before the debate. Unfortunately, like, I worry that making this exact argument after the debate might feel too late, right? Like, he should have been saying all along, like, I know I'm not a young man. I don't talk as well as I used to. I don't debate as well as I used to, but I know how to do this job. I know right from wrong. I know the truth, and you can trust me, right? Like, I think there is validity to that argument, but having to make it after the debate, man, it just, like, it just feels like, it feels like the toothpaste is out of the tube.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's not, it wouldn't have necessarily been about lowering expectations, but certainly setting them to something that, where what we saw would not have surprised us as much.
Yeah, I feel like, it's because it's the performance itself, but then sort of the reaction to it and the misunderstanding of people's concerns that is causing the concern. You know, Sarah Lazarus, our writer, pointed out rightly, I think, that Biden does so well in front of a live crowd. That's something they should know. That's something they should have known before they agreed to do this debate. Like, there's all these things that makes us feel like we're maybe not in as safe a hands as we could be. That had, you're right, like, had we just addressed some of this and not had the debate, we wouldn't be just having this conversation.
Yeah. Unfortunately, polling since the debate has been pretty grim. A new poll from CBS found that 72% of voters don't think Biden has the cognitive and mental health to serve as president. The remainder thinks everyone is overreacting. I can drive fine, said the respondents. The sun got in my eyes, and now all of a sudden you want to tell me I have to ask permission to go drive a mile down the road. It has nothing to do with age. Nothing. It was a mistake. It was an accident, which happens to everyone. No one took your keys away, Allie, when you called me crying because you drove into the back of that school bus because you were looking at your phone. It's not the same? Okay, it's not the same. I'm just not having this conversation. It's ridiculous. I'm not going to be dependent on a stranger to get around because of one little fender bender, because that's what it was. That's what it was. I'm not downplaying it. I will pay to fix the door and the window there. What else is there to discuss? Like, we have to talk about it. We have to face the reality. What happens next time? I don't need to sit down. Stop talking to me like I'm a child. I'm your father, and I won't be talked down to in my own home. This conversation is over. It's my decision, and that's that. And if you don't like it, you can leave. While there are lots of polling showing that the debate confirmed voters' worst fears about Biden, at the same time, polls like this one from Morning Consult found that when asked to choose between Biden and Trump, 45% chose Biden, while 44% chose Trump, a similar state of affairs to before the debate. But then the argument becomes, see, the debate didn't matter. Everyone already knew that Biden was an ancient, mumbling, slack-jawed ghost. And to that I say, okay, I guess. Besides, increasingly, we're starting to see polling showing the ramifications of the debate. There are polls coming out that are showing that Biden was already behind going into it and is now behind further. There was a poll came out this morning that showed Biden had picked up 5 or 6 points since the debate. By Tuesday, it did feel as though the dam was beginning to break. Former Ohio Congressman Tim Ryan declared Kamala Harris should replace Biden as the nominee. Now, if you hear a loud buzzing, that's just thousands of K-Hive members emerging from their underground hibernation. It's a rare event. They emerged to tweet in May to remind you of your opinions they disagreed with in 2019. Said Tim Ryan, America is craving this generational change. You can feel it in the air. It's time for the Democratic Party to let go of the past and give the American people what they want. Is that generational change in the air or particulate matter now that the Supreme Court has overturned Chevron? It's hard to say.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Illinois Congressman Mike Quigley praised Biden's presidency on CNN, but also said this.
It sounds like you're actually open to the idea that it might be the right decision for him to step aside.
What I'm stressing is it has to be his decision. But we have to be honest with ourselves that it wasn't just a horrible night. It's his decision. I just want him to appreciate at this time just how much it impacts not just his race, but all the other races coming in November.
And as we've always said about Mike Quigley, a man we've heard of many times, smart guy, clear thinker, Quigley. And that's his name, Quigley, and we like him. Responding to rumors that he might be throwing his hat in the ring, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear said, only the president can determine his future as a candidate. He is the candidate, and as long as he is, I'm supporting him. But when pressed, Beshear admitted, it's flattering when people mention your name in something like that, but I think it's a reflection of all the good things going on in Kentucky. Andy Beshear showing a little leg there, which can get you 5 to 10 years in prison in Kentucky, so be careful. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse said he was pretty horrified by Biden's performance at the debate. Whitehouse said, I think people want to make sure that this is a campaign that's ready to go and win, that the president and his team are being candid with us about his condition, that this was a real anomaly and not just the way he is these days. I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but I also don't want to elect him president. You feel me? Are you picking up what I'm putting down? That doesn't sound like Whitehouse. On MSNBC, Nancy Pelosi, who had previously been unequivocal in backing Biden, said this. I think it's a legitimate question to say if this is an episode or is this a condition. Episode or condition? These love it or leave it segments write themselves. Pelosi did say that both candidates should be asked these questions, and she praised President Biden for his accomplishments. Then, midday Tuesday, Texas Representative Lloyd Doggett became the first Democrat in Congress to come right out and publicly call on Biden to step aside, saying in a statement, my decision to make these strong reservations public is not done lightly, nor does it in any way diminish my respect for all that President Biden has achieved, recognizing that, unlike Trump, President Biden's first commitment has always been to our country, not himself. I am hopeful that he will make the painful and difficult decision to withdraw. I respectfully call on him to do so. It may not be what Biden wants to hear, but it's a Doggett world out there, which reminds me, we didn't really have time to go into this, but there's a photo of RFK Jr. eating a barbecue dog.
Yeah, this is tough.
Jesus.
It's really been a frustrating couple of days. Like, the other part of this, too, is I think most Democrats who are hyper-engaged on this subject are hyper-engaged on the question of, can Biden win, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a question about Biden as a messenger. That's a question about Biden as a candidate, whether or not he can answer these concerns sufficiently to get to Election Day. But obviously, for most people out there, they're not just thinking about this in terms of the election. They're thinking, is Biden in position to serve for the next 4 years? And even if you believe, as I believe, that Joe Biden in any capacity is a better option than Donald Trump, it is very hard to figure out how to reassure voters, not just that Joe Biden is capable right now, but that he will be capable for the next 4.5 years. I don't know how you do that after that debate. And part of the farce of all this is before you can even get to reaching the people that have been expressing and now expressing more fervently their concerns about Joe Biden as a candidate, there is clearly a very big elite conversation going on. Like, every day on the editorial pages, in the Atlantic, on television and cable news. And like, you can say that that conversation doesn't matter as much as it used to. Maybe it doesn't. But you can't say both that the debate performance wasn't as harmful as the media's overreaction to it, and then not answer those concerns, right? Like, Joe Biden can go to the microphones at any time and take questions for 2 hours. He can call into a podcast. He can do an interview. He is free at any moment to just assuage these anxieties that people have. And the fact that we're here days after this debate and he hasn't done that and he's gone to private fundraisers and read off of a teleprompter is not doing anything to alleviate these questions. And so they have to, like, they can't both say that this is a media narrative that's being overblown while at the same time not answering the concerns that would make that media narrative shift. It's like, if it's overblown, great. That would be a great thing. No one would be happier than, like, engaged, anxious Democrats would be fucking thrilled to see Joe Biden put aside these concerns, because we saw what we're about to talk about it, but, like, the stakes are total. The Supreme Court is basically saying Donald Trump can do whatever he wants if he becomes president again. They're eviscerating the regulatory state. The stakes, if we can get them in front of people, would be persuasive. So Joe Biden has to get out of the way of these stakes, either by addressing these concerns or by stepping aside. But right now we're doing neither.
This is a little bit of Monday morning quarterbacking, I guess, but would it have helped or would it help now? I think it would reassure me a little bit if we started putting the team he has around him front and center and making that a direct contrast with the team that Trump is going to have.
That's a really good
around
point.
Him.
Yeah.
Because that, I think it was in Axios that thing came out where it said he's very good between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. like, from whatever source said that. And it's like, okay, that's great. But so, like, let's talk about who is bolstering him and the good people who are around him.
But see, all of that, all of that might be a substantive answer to the critique, like, for people who are, like, hyper engaged with the news. But that does nothing for the typical person who, like, I think about that undecided voter who said, Trump has no policies, Biden has policies, but can he execute them? And you can maybe assuage some elite concern people who understand that the presidency is an office surrounded by advisors and the administrative state and that it is a result of negotiations with Congress, that it's more than just one person. But we are trying to win over the next 4 months, and that is going to be basically on Joe Biden's shoulders if he is the nominee. So where is he?
I feel like this sort of, it's like the White House at some point is like trying to play chicken with the media or play chicken with anyone who watches the debate. But it's like, no, we're all on board. We want to help get the chicken across the road. Our concern is when we all work together to do that, will the chicken be able to be president? Where, like, they think it's about a face off about this issue when it's like, we all want to vote for someone who we think is going to, at least on our side, who's actually going to do what we want them to do. So don't put us in opposition to you. Like, we want reassure us and we will get on board. But the fact there's no reassurance then I think speaks to like a larger questions are like, okay, so what's really going on? Who is he talking to? What are they telling him?
Yes. I think that, like, a person says, hey, I have deep concerns about whether Joe Biden is the right candidate to defeat Trump. And the response is, the stakes are too high to have this debate. Joe Biden is the nominee. Everything you're doing is hurting Joe Biden. But it's really kind of, it's begging the question, well, why is Joe Biden the nominee? Well, because he has decided he won't step aside. Well, what if we think his stepping aside might be better for defeating Trump, given the totality of the stakes? So, yes, I mean, I there is a story that the DNC is considering moving up the vote to make Joe Biden the nominee because they know that once Joe Biden is officially the nominee, everyone will have no choice but to accept that this debate is over. And man, that sure does
that would
make it impossible to fix this if this problem is unsolvable. But I do, like, I think polling that has been coming out even today as we're recording this, and it's coming out in real time, so it's hard for us to go through it on this show. At first, what you were seeing was extreme unhappiness with Joe Biden as the candidate across the board, but then it not manifesting in the actual overall, like, 30,000 foot view of the race. I think that's starting to change. You're starting to see both that Joe Biden is dropping versus Trump. That's what Nate Silver pointed out today. but also that other Democrats are starting to look as though they would perform better. The other piece of this is, as House Democrats start to worry that Joe Biden's poor performance in the debate might not just cost him his election, but might hurt Senate races and House races, I think that's when you start to see this unraveling. And I, you know, either that's starting today or it's not, but it sure felt like something shifted today. Now, yeah. Part of the reason mm-hmm. part of the reason people feel so terrified about the prospect of going into November with a candidate starting off so far behind without a clear path to fix it is because what we have seen out of the Supreme Court. On Monday, the Supreme Court ruled on Donald Trump's immunity case, determining that U.S. presidents have absolute immunity for official acts and no immunity for unofficial acts. So basically, it means the president can run you over with his car, but only if he's wearing his Air Force One jacket. So happy 4th of July. I will say, this has given President Biden the chance to do the funniest thing possible. The ruling.
I mean, yeah. look, dinner's on the table. Are we going to eat? You know.
The question then becomes: was Donald Trump's plot to overturn the 2020 election an official or unofficial act? Also, the other question is: why did I come back from Survivor? Are there other shows where they take away your phone? The three liberal judges dissented from the 6-3 opinion. Dissenting is, of course, the legal term for screaming and retching in the ladies' room. In their scorching dissent, the trio of liberals pointed out that the ruling basically makes the president a king above the law. Not a lot of kings under the law, historically, even fewer at the law. And then above it, not a chance, not with these kings. Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote in the dissent, "The court has effectively created a law-free zone around the president, upsetting the status quo that has existed since the founding. Before Monday, the only law-free zones were Waffle House and the area where you line up to board a Southwest flight." Wrote Sotomayor, "Orders the Navy's SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? Immune. Orders a military exchange for a pardon? Immune. Immune, immune, immune. Even if these nightmare scenarios never play out, and I pray they never do, the damage has been done. The relationship between the president and the people he serves has shifted irrevocably." I'm just saying, it'll be a lot easier to get me, John, and Tommy's vote if Biden shows a little creativity right now, you know?
Listen, immune.
The case now goes back to the lower courts, where the U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan is tasked with sorting through Trump's actions in the run-up to January 6th and determining which of them qualify as official versus unofficial. Again, no part of overturning an election that he knew wasn't stolen could possibly qualify as official business. It's like saying, hey, we need you to sort through this mountain of turds and figure out which ones are brownies. They're all turds, of course, but go ahead and give each one a lick to make sure. Sending the case back to the lower court would likely push any potential trial past Election Day in November. What a week for Donald Trump. Biden bombs the debate. The Supreme Court nukes his January 6th trial. He's got to be happier than Martha and Alito watching all the pride flags come down. A delayed trial and a Trump win in November would likely mean Trump would never face prosecution, as he can now kill the case, sure in the knowledge that he is explicitly above the law. In response to the ruling, Donald Trump posted to Truth Social in all caps, "Big win for our Constitution and democracy. Proud to be an American. Proud to be a New Yorker," cried King Kong, ripping the Chrysler Building in half with his hands. AOC said in a statement posted to X that she would file impeachment articles after Congress returns from its holiday break. Geez, said the attendees of AOC's upcoming July 4th barbecue. "I, too, like to angrily eat several hot dogs before getting down to business." On Monday, President Biden weighed in on the SCOTUS ruling.
"I know I will respect the limits of the presidential powers I have for 3.5 years. But any president, including Donald Trump, will now be free to ignore the law."
Come on, Joe. Have a little fun. Send the military to just one Supreme Court justice's house. Have them throw a few eggs. Biden quoted Justice Sonia Sotomayor because it's a good line.
"With fear for our democracy, I dissent." End of quote. So should the American people dissent. I dissent. May God bless you all, and may God help preserve our democracy.
Then Biden took out two machetes and backflipped vertically into a Blackhawk. I swear to God, they keep cutting away at the exact wrong time. On Tuesday, the Manhattan DA's office said that while it believed Trump's arguments to be without merit, it wouldn't oppose his request to file a motion for his conviction to be tossed out. This will almost certainly delay Trump's sentencing, which was scheduled for July 11th. The Supreme Court has ruined Free Slurpee Day. And that's where I draw the line. Of course, Monday's ruling was only the most recent jaw-dropping SCOTUS decision. On Friday, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of a January 6th rioter in his obstruction case. Makes sense, said the White House employee that had to scrub human feces off the walls of the U.S. Capitol. According to the court, prosecutors had overstepped by charging the man under a 2002 law created during the collapse of Enron to punish accounting fraud and destruction of evidence. Exactly. They didn't destroy evidence. You don't destroy something by putting shit in it. It's still there. It's just covered in shit now. It's right there in the Constitution. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts said the law specifically covers crimes that affect the availability or integrity of physical records or objects used in official proceedings, not attempts to stop an official proceeding itself. I love that all these people who violently attempted to overthrow the government are getting off on the same level of technicalities that allowed Air Bud to play basketball. The Supreme Court also rejected a challenge to anti-homelessness laws, ruling that the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, can ban unhoused people from sleeping in parks. There, that ought to teach those people to not have houses. In the court's 6-3 ruling, the court ruled homelessness is not a protected status under the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. This is, of course, technically constitutional because it is cruel and usual. Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who joined Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson, wrote in the dissent, "Sleep is a biological necessity, not a crime," said every teenager to his mom after she says, "Come on, it's a beautiful day out there you're missing." Also on Friday, the Supreme Court overturned the Chevron Doctrine, a 40-year-old rule which allows judges to defer to federal agencies when it comes to reasonable interpretation and administration of ambiguous federal laws, returning the power solely to judges. Step aside, EPA scientist Clarence Thomas will decide how much poison should be in our drinking water based on one late-night text from Doug, CEO, Poisons Inc., parens, owns a catamaran. Conservatives have been openly hostile to the doctrine, which they say gives federal agencies too much power. And power is for presidents who have lost the popular vote and the corrupt judges they appoint, not agencies full of experts trying to make sure nothing at Panera kills you. And finally, a new museum. A light spot, you know, in the darkness.
We needed a little something at the end.
Finally, a new museum dedicated to fossilized dinosaur poop opened in Arizona last month. And they said Arizona didn't have culture. Huh? The Pooseum features over... Is it really called that?
It is called the Pooseum.
The Pooseum features over 7,000 specimens of fossilized excrement, or coprolites, including the largest fossilized dinosaur poop ever found, named Barnum. And he's got my full endorsement.
All right, finally! Well, so there you go.
Hey, tough week of news.
Yeah. Yep.
We were on the road for 2 weeks straight. We were launching the book and doing all these shows. We had a great time in Charlotte, a great time in Asheville. We had a great time doing these book events and doing these canvases. And man, did that debate just punch us all in the fucking gut. But
I think it had to.
I do think... I'm glad that we're actually having the debate now, you know? I am glad about that. Yeah. Because the alternate scenario where Joe Biden had a kind of middling performance and these concerns remained and probably remained in voters' mind but didn't activate this conversation, I don't know is better than actually facing it now, if that's some comfort.
I mean, considering he was already trailing in the polls, like, it's not as if, oh my God, we've upended this, like, huge success. Like, things were already not looking great. What we on the left have to offer is an honest conversation. To have any hope of anything happening, like, that is our strength. Again, I don't know what to do about the Supreme Court. That seems like a separate issue that I'm hoping we'll figure out here in this room. But I think this, in the terms of history, like, we have to be able to have these conversations.
And just that, like, that's why it's so important that we get this. Like, we have to have this now. I don't think there was any way around it. If Joe Biden's the nominee, we'll do everything we can for him and we'll stop having this debate. But he's not the nominee yet. And I think it's worth having if Donald Trump wins and is able to purport one or two or three more Supreme Court justices, that's a level of damage I don't think we can even comprehend right now. I just, the pain of all of this is that we should be talking about abortion. We should be talking about the Supreme Court. We should be talking about Donald Trump's danger. We should be talking about child tax credits. We should be talking about inflation and housing and all these issues. And it's not the media's fault that we're having this debate. And by the way, it's not Joe Biden's campaign's fault that we're not talking about the issues we need to be talking about. He has a great campaign around him. He has great people around him. The idea that it was the fault of debate prep or the fault of the media's narrative, like, all of that to me seems like beside the point. We're having this debate because of what we all saw. And on the right, they might fall in line because they don't care about democracy or they're afraid of Donald Trump. But on our side, we're supposed to care. We're supposed to care about the truth. And we're not supposed to be loyal to Joe Biden because of who Joe Biden is. We're supposed to be loyal to the values and mission that we share. And that's what this debate is. It's a debate about what the best thing is, not just for the party, but for the country in a very dangerous moment. And I'm glad that we're on the side that is willing to have it. And with that, you know, Gladiator 2 and the Wicked movie are going to come out on the same day. That's something to look forward to.
I'm obviously going to see it, but
there's going to be Spaceballs 2 at some point. That's something to look forward to.
No, no.
I'll see it in
theaters. Beetlejuice is opening the Venice Film Festival.
We got more Beetlejuices coming. Lots of good stuff ahead. All right.
Lots to look forward to.
Thanks, everybody. We are off, obviously, for the July 4th holiday, a moment we all come together to celebrate the end of the age of kings. And we will see you next week for What a Weekday on Tuesday, and then the regular live show out of L.A. And who knows what the next week will bring us, you know? Who possibly knows? That's the beauty of politics, huh? The future is unwritten. It's like the weather, you know? Who could predict?
Yes.
Crooked Media Production. It is written and produced by me, John Lovett, and Lee Eisenberg. Kendra James is our executive producer. Chris Lord is our producer. And Kennedy Hill is our associate producer. Hallie Kiefer is our head writer. Sarah Lazarus and Jocelyn Kaufman, Peter Miller, Alan Pierre, Will Miles, and Mohamed El-Sheikhi are our writers. Evan Sutton is our editor. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis provide audio support. Stephen Colon is our audio engineer. And Milo Kim is our videographer. Our theme song is written and performed by Sure Sure. Thanks to our designer, Bernardo Serna, for creating and running all of our visuals, which you can't see because this is a podcast. And to our digital producers, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Mia Kelman, and Matt DeGroat, for filming and editing video each week so you can.